And a very good Monday morning to you, my fine folks. Of course, this show is so fantastulabulous that we repeat it multiple times, but original broadcasting time, it's Monday the 6th in mid-morning, 15 minutes or so after 10, Eastern Daylight Time. And that means, after taking a sabbatical last week, because, you know, even myself and my partners in crime get to rest from time to time, we are back with a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor, Adam being I, professor being Dr. Ronald L. Feynman, our official presidentologist, historical scholar, blogger, and all-around man of interestingness. Now, he makes his home in Florida, where there have been some very recent developments from the governor's office regarding the current emergency in the United States of America. First, Ron, let me ask you, before we get into some more discussions, and we're not going to talk only about the current national emergency. We'll talk some presidential history and politics and other items just to make things as enjoyable as possible. So, Governor DeSantis, I guess the prevailing belief is that he was a little too late in declaring the quarantine and other restrictions that other governors have. Is that kind of the prevailing opinion?
Yeah, first of all, good morning, Adam. Thank you for inviting me again. Yes, he is too much of a Trump loyalist. He and Kemp, Brian Kemp of Georgia, and these are big states, and there's been a lot of trouble in Florida particularly, but also in Georgia, and they've been very reluctant until the last couple of days to actually take action and shut down the economy. And that's why earlier I was critical this week on my blog of both of them and others. And there's still about 9 states, even at this moment, that have still not done it. And that's why I applauded not only the Democrats, you know, because pretty much most Democratic states went along, but the Republican states have been holding out, meaning the governors are Republican or the legislatures. But that's why I applauded the Massachusetts Governor Baker, the Maryland Governor Hogan, and also the Ohio governor, Mike DeWine, although I'm not a fan of Mike DeWine generally, but I think he took the right action along with Massachusetts and Maryland. They're the outstanding Republican governors on this issue, doing what they needed to do early, and I think that's a good thing.
It's always interesting, Ron, as we've talked about, and as you know, politics makes strange bedfellows. I've seen some of my most liberal Facebook friends, most of whom are more acquaintances, but most I've actually met in person, and most, I would say, of these people would tend to the left or heavily to the left. They have really praised DeWine, and DeWine is a very conservative Republican. I would actually say he's more conservative than Mike Pence. Also the fact that Mike Pence is just more well-spoken and more likable in general. DeWine just wrote...
Well, I'm not a fan of him. There's no question. I'm not a fan of him. But actually, I don't think he's as rich as a freak on that issue as is Pence. Maybe on other things he's more right-wing. But I think Mike Pence is pretty despicable is all I can say, you know. Yeah. Although I do think, compared to Trump, he has done a bit of a better job, seemingly responsible at these daily news meetings. But Trump, he'd be better off if he wasn't even there. He's only there because he considers, like, in place of a rally that he could have before his supporters. But he's an embarrassment every day. He should not be at those gatherings. He should leave it to Pence.
DeWine just doesn't have the well-spoken nature and the presence that Mike Pence does. As we've talked about online, Ron, even if you don't like Mike Pence, he has a good presence about him. He's very well-spoken. He does sound presidential, and he looks presidential, too. Certainly some of the qualities you don't see in Donald Trump. We would have to overlook some of his beliefs, which we certainly don't agree with.
You have to be careful, though. If Donald Trump hears you say that, he'll be angry at Pence.
Well, it's free speech, and that's one thing we hold true here as Americans, and especially in time of a crisis, people's opinions will come out. But certainly between DeWine and Pence, they're somewhat similar on many issues. I see DeWine actually as being further to the right. Pence comes across as more likable. He has a much better presence.
But his wife.
as long as you don't have to
look at. What is Mike DeWine's wife like? I don't even know if he is married, I guess, right?
Francis, I believe.
What is she like?
can't say I've seen a picture of her, but DeWine, he's no...
Couldn't be worse, though.
DeWine is not exactly someone who's going to be on the cover of GQ anyway, and Plus, he's just kind of short and short and weaselly looking, and he's kind of had that look even when he was younger. He hasn't really aged overly well, but he is in his 70s.
How did he manage to get this far to be a senator and governor? Then I want to know how Ohio did that.
DeWine is interesting, Ron, and this came up during the previous administration when he was attorney general. He's had literally every, you think of a political office, he's pretty much had it, and he'd run for governor. He was lieutenant governor. And when he became attorney general, it was like, well, it's kind of like a loser position. Not that an attorney general is not extremely important, but it's like, well, he couldn't be governor, couldn't be president, he couldn't be vice president, couldn't be secretary of state. So he'll just be attorney general because he's a professional politician. That's all he knows how to do. And
well, he also was U.S. Senator. You got to remember that he was in the Senate.
Yeah, I said he's had every possible position, and national level and the state level, and now he's governor, which I think he wanted to be for quite a while. Yeah. And then we had George Voinovich, who was governor and had been mayor of Cleveland. He'd run for Senate against Metzenbaum and lost, and he ran again and became a senator. So we have a lot of these professional politicians in Ohio, and interestingly, many of them tend to be moderate. Voinovich, I would say, a fairly moderate Republican. But DeWine's always been real conservative, and he's not moderated like Kasich. At one time, Kasich and DeWine were pretty similar in terms of their positions,
Kasich,
they changed quite a bit.
Much better. Yeah.
And you had DeWine running against someone with excellent charisma, younger, much better-looking candidate, Rich Cordray, known as a Jeopardy champion.
Yes.
Yeah, well, he does have good charisma.
People in Ohio blind, you think?
And he actually is now in his 60s, even though you still think of him as being younger, because he's always looked real youthful. That's actually been a part of his campaign once. In fact, I know when he was running, it was I believe for U.S. Congress, maybe 20-30 years ago, when he was in his 30s, I believe. One of his commercials indicated, "The biggest problem I have is when I go to dinner with my wife, that they ask me for my ID." Because they don't believe that he's actually...
That's funny.
He's actually in young middle age, that he's not a college student. So he had that youthful exuberance and a much better presence. And as we've talked about multiple times, although not recently, he was expected to win but didn't. And DeWine was kind of a surprise winner. And now, again, we have this politics made strange bedfellows. Some very liberal Facebook acquaintances of mine praising DeWine and how he's reacted.
And it's I am. Yeah.
It's like, well, you know.
That I am. Otherwise, but on that.
They don't agree with him on some issues, and abortion certainly is one of the biggies. But when it comes to this, I feel he's been a great leader. They don't even bring up that his lack of charisma and lack of authority just isn't overly good. Which I think was why attorney general was a good position for him. He's a good lawyer. He's a smart man. He's not someone I think should be in public view like a governor. And we're seeing his weaknesses, but people do respect the fact that he's been so proactive in this. And also, Dr. Amy Acton, she certainly has gotten quite a following. She has a fan club on Facebook, and that's probably helped DeWine's image. So it sometimes takes an event, and a very tragic event, to adjust people's opinions and make you think twice about these people in office.
And well, they're complex. People are not always, you can't always predict how they're going to act.
Certainly, we all agree that we should have less of this Democrat-Republican. We should have more of the fact that we're all Americans, and maybe we're seeing a little more of that. It shouldn't have to take a tragic event for that to happen, but that's kind of how life goes sometimes.
Yep.
So recently, Ron, the CDC has recommended that people who go out in public should just make a mask out of a bandana or an old T-shirt or something like that and go out in public. It's not required. It's suggested. Donald said he's not going to wear one. So I know you don't shop at Walmart, Ron. We all know that. So wherever you shop, you go to the drugstore,
Well, actually, Paul and I have face masks because we have a social worker that Paul talks to, and she had some extra, so she brought over two. So we go for walks, he and I, and if we go out anywhere, we don't go out much, we wear the mask. And when I go into the local supermarket, the Publix, the people know me there, and I joke and I say, I look like a bank robber, don't I? And they all laugh.
So Paul, being your younger son, who does reside at your home there in Boca Raton in Florida, for those who don't know Ron as intimately as I do, so I want to see a picture, Ron. Do you have one of those cool-looking bandanas with the Paisleys on it, or maybe with the Miami Dolphins logo or something else? Or
no, it's just a plain white one. But if you get on Skype later after the show, I'll show you. You know, we could be on for a few minutes, and you could see it, you know, because I could put it on.
Well, see if I can put that in my schedule.
Or sometime another day, any day. I mean, I'm home. I'm teaching, but I'm not, you know, leaving. The only time I go is to go shopping and that's about it, you know, food shopping and drugstore, you know, if I have to, but otherwise I'm home. But, you know, I just wrote on Facebook over the weekend that people are complaining so much as if they have to constantly be out. But think of how much stuff we have in the house, most of us, unless we're poor or homeless, that people 100 years ago didn't have. If you looked at my posting this, you know, from Saturday, it's just so crazy. People get that upset about having to stay home when so many people supposedly wish they could stay home. And then when they have a chance to stay home, they don't want to stay home.
Right. It's called, I guess, be careful what you wish for. But in my case, I like to work. I'm not hesitant to say that I think most Americans are lazy.
I like working too. But,
that it's sometimes human nature. I prefer to work. I prefer to stay busy. I like what I do. Yes. I like the fact that I help people, and I like making money. I mean, and I don't hide the fact that I'm a capitalist.
But that's when people are not making money. Yes, that's the problem.
Some people think capitalism is bad, that it's a sin, that you should be a socialist and just share your money with everybody, and even if they're lazy, well, I have a very serious problem with that. I remain a capitalist, but again, what I call compassionate capitalism, where again, as I've said, I agree that Jeff Bezos and Mark Zuckerberg should pay higher taxes than I do or Ron does or most of the people that I know, but they still should keep their money. And if Jeff Bezos builds an empire and he's worth $500 billion, that's great. And yes, I am jealous.
Not worth that much, not $500 billion, but he's worth about $140 billion, I think. That's not $500 billion. Right. But honestly, his mistreatment of his workers at Amazon are absolutely outrageous. You know, it's just unacceptable. You know, that
whatever
should not be
he's
allowed.
Worth,
what's to better?
It's a lot more than I'm worth. I'll put it that way. So yeah, that's
really
that I can assure you of. So
how do I know you're telling the truth?
We'll talk about some of the issues. Well, as my mom always told me, because she was actually a journalism major and she went to college. I think I told you that. She said, you know, journalism, which includes broadcasting, radio is journalism, is a low paying field. Even some of the well known people. I mean, yes, they may make a decent amount of money if they're a good name, but not as much as you might think. It really is one of the lower.
Just like professors. Professors don't earn that much either. All right, but not as great as people imagine. You're right.
Also depends where you work too. As many DJs and broadcasting people work in a small city because they get a good opportunity where the cost of living is fairly low. I mean, in Ohio, even the big cities, the cost of living is pretty good. And if you live in a smaller city, and Marion being a good example, cost of living is pretty good. And Marion has most of the amenities you'd find in a city. And if you want the big city excitement, you can go to Columbus or Cleveland or Toledo or Dayton. All those places are within a couple hours if you make good time on the road. So,
or Cincinnati, but that's further, I guess.
A little more than 2 hours, but I guess if you drive really quickly, you could probably do it. So it's a good compromise versus if you go to New York City and you work on a low end of a broadcasting station, especially not a big station, not WABC or WCBS or one of the other huge stations with 50,000 watts and all these fancy people, you probably end up sharing an apartment with six different people because of the cost of living being so much higher.
So, yeah, and those people are much more in danger of getting the virus because they have no way to separate themselves from each other.
I mean,
as I said to my son, we have a 2,000 square foot house here, different wings, so you know we don't have to always be together. So we're apart, but yeah, we can get together if we want to. You know, so we're fortunate.
Rewards of your work, the money is only part of it, but certainly in this society, money does pay the bills and money talks.
Yes.
as we all know. We're speaking
another thing. Talks and BS walks.
My dad used to say that. We are talking with our official presidentologist here on the Talking Place, WWGH Radio, Dr. Ronald L. Fineman from Florida. Of course, we're here in our studios in the wonderful Buckeye State on the Talking Place, WWGH Radio. So let's switch gears, and we'll switch gears again. Ron is the author of the blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com, which is a left-leaning kind of a diary or daily journal, a blog, weblog, if you want to call it that, which is, of course, that's what it is, talking about politics and current events and not unexpectedly about the Donald. And as you folks probably don't know, probably already know, that is, Ron is not exactly a fan of the Donald. And with the Donald's handling of this current crisis, I would say Ron's opinion has dropped a bit. Is that I've been things that Ron likes about Donald, and he and I have discussed that. But I would say at this point, those are overshadowed by things that Ron doesn't like. One thing we know, Ron, is we've talked about, and I've used Governor Jeb Bush as an example, and we'll use him again. A political leader, you know, governor being kind of like a president of a state, a governmental leader, a president or a presidential equivalent, his or her handling in a time of crisis is one way to judge that person. Now, we've discussed that, although you don't really dislike Jeb Bush, Bushes in general, you have somewhat of a liking for, but there are certainly people you like better. But you did agree
Well, let's say I prefer Jeb Bush in the White House right now, if I had a choice.
You did agree that during the hurricane that Jeb Bush handled it very well, and that definitely got you some points.
Yes.
Of course, we could say, well, how would a Democratic or a different Republican governor have handled it? But if Jeb Bush handles a hurricane well, which I think is one of the most important things that a governor must do in Florida, because hurricanes are inevitable. This coronavirus was not something we expected, and is thrown us all for a loop, to put it mildly. But,
and I'm concerned it's going to affect Florida. If we have a hurricane in August or September, October, on top of this, in Florida, oh my God, is all I can say.
But
and I have a feeling, expecting a very high hurricane season. I just hope it doesn't hit here, though.
If you're in Louisiana or Florida, hurricanes are a fact of life, and the chance is pretty good that in the next few years there's going to be a hurricane. And how the governor handles it, how the governor prepares, apportions money, very important. And that certainly gets points with everybody, as Ron has talked about, maybe even a bit surprised that Governor Jeb Bush did handle it well and understood, you know, we're all on the same team, we're all Floridians, we're all Americans, and let's get this problem solved and get life back to normal. Now,
let me point out that Jeb was better in Florida than his brother, the president, was with Hurricane Katrina in Louisiana, a very poor response by the president. So I think Jeb was much better than George W.
Now, of course, we have the Donald, and coronavirus being different in that it wasn't expected. We think nowadays it's 2020. Medicine is pretty advanced. Ron, several years ago, had an advanced operation that really is rather routine. And he is alive and kicking and doing extremely well. Again, comes across as quite a bit younger than his actual age. And many of these operations and complex medical procedures, medications, they're one step away from a miracle. And now we have this flu-like illness that has completely decimated our economy and changed the way of life for everybody. Even people that are famous and rich, we're all in the same boat together. So we look at Donald Trump, who isn't just the president, but he's an American. And his handling of this crisis, and certainly it's something we could spend 10 shows on. And I would say Ron and I agree on some things, don't agree on others. I'd like to find out more about how we remove the position of the infectious disease expert, because that's come up a few times. Is that something that was not a smart idea? Well, I don't know all that much about it. So before I kind of hear the propaganda, I want to know the facts. And we may never know about that.
He closed that agency in 2018 because he can't stand the president before him. Every single day he tries to attack Obama for things that Obama has nothing to do with or should not be attacked on. But I've never had a president like this that does this to the one before him, never to this extent, you know, and he's just not stopping. He's refused to take any responsibility for anything, and that is not a good example to young people for the future either. It's really bad.
Well, Donald, he certainly is a competitive person. He likes to see the glass being half full, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to berate people that you may consider to be a rival or to be a predecessor. That's been an issue with him, certainly since the beginning of the presidency, and something Ron and others are not shy to talk about. We mentioned the word empathy. That's a word that probably didn't hear much, really, until the Trump administration. It seems like it's been a catchphrase, a catchword, I guess, in this administration. A week and a half ago, Ron, you're right, coronavirus pandemic proves the need for an empathetic president and another New Deal and great society in the future. Now, in the 30s, and that's right before you were born, Ron, I wasn't born either in the 30s, the New Deal and the 60s, Great Society, we need leaders like Franklin Roosevelt, Lyndon Johnson, as well as all their foibles, as all human beings have demonstrated empathy and understood the need for federal government action. Now, do you feel, Ron, that Trump delayed going forward with the necessary the necessary measures to try to control this? Do you think his ego has gotten in the way? Does he not listen to other people? I would say you probably think it's all three of those, but what is the main issue that you have?
And I think he's in danger that he's going to fire Dr. Burke and Dr. Fauci because they're contradicting him sometimes on the stage when he's right there, and I think he's just barely tolerating it because they're the medical experts, and now they're even being threatened, especially Dr. Fauci. They have to give him a Secret Service protection. Can you believe that? The crazy people who think that he's somehow a menace because he's destroying the economy by telling people that there's a need to deal with this crisis now before it gets worse. It's just sickening. So I think he's been horrendous in the way he refuses to listen to people, and he knew 2 months ago that there was reports from intelligence, and now he's firing the intelligence czar, whatever it is, just the other day, that he's refusing to accept, and then suddenly he says, oh, it's only a few cases, we'll be gone, and instead it's becoming magnifying to make us the most stricken country in the world, and this is not something he's going to be able to outlive as far as blame for it. I don't see how anybody could give him any credit for it. But the crazy people will. There's always going to be those who have no brains in their head, and they're going to say, you know, they're going to back him no matter what he says or does.
You wrote on the 26th of March, President Trump will go down in history as having incited a massive loss of life by his stubborn insistence that America return to normal and go back to work by Easter Sunday. He has adjusted.
Now he's back. Well,
Donald has adjusted that statement since then, but that was what he had originally said. My question is this, Ron. There are diseases floating around all the time. This is an especially catchy and serious one. Although, again, most people who do get coronavirus, the symptoms are moderate. They might be asymptomatic. But obviously, one loss of life is too many. But
yes.
When it comes to other catchy diseases, there's always a flu. Every year, there seems to be a new flu strain. And other diseases that are contagious, not to mention the fact that just walking in the street, there are multiple things that could be considered to be dangerous.
Well, of course, we're all in danger every day, frankly. It's true. But this seems to be much more easily caught. I don't know why. I don't understand why this has occurred. This is a really crazy disease. And it's terrifying because it makes you afraid to even touch your face or anything. It's like if you follow everything that some people say, you can't even breathe properly. That's the problem.
No question that our economy has been decimated 3 weeks into the start of the major shutdowns, and it's not getting any better. And certain industries.
I think we're going to have a Great Depression. It's not going to end in a few months, I don't think. I wish it would, but I don't think so.
I don't see half of the restaurants and bars being able to reopen. And again, hair salons where hairdressers often rent a chair and then they receive the payment for their services and tips. They're not working.
It's terrible.
And they're self-employed, so the unemployment equation
horrible.
Is different. Now, we've decimated the economy in an effort to save lives and in the interest of public health. This is one thing that I've seen. But every year we have the flu and other diseases that are floating around. Where is the line drawn, Ron, where we decide the economy effect is so drastic that maybe we do have to not be quite as careful about public health as we'd like to? Or are we saying one life is too many? Where is the line drawn?
I don't know. There's no easy answer. I see what you're saying. You can't be that extreme to say shut everything down every year. That's true. But for some reason, this particular virus is more deadly and seems clear from around the world, too, than anything has been for a long time. So, and supposedly worse since the Spanish flu of 1918, 1919. And by the way, that also annoys me. He keeps on saying the Spanish flu of 1917, and I'm yelling at the set, can't you even be right on the year you've heard it from others? It's 18 and 19, not 17. But he's wrong on everything. Like he tells us that Seoul, South Korea has 38 million people when it's actually it's Tokyo that has 30 million, and it only has 10 million in Seoul, and he claims to always know what he's talking about, but he doesn't know what he's saying. And it's just annoying that he's never accurate in anything, and yet he claims he knows everything.
So you would agree, Ron, we don't really know where to draw the line between a destruction.
Not easy.
It's a destruction of the economy.
Destruction of. We have to do this. Obviously, we can't do this for the next 10 years. Right. No.
I understand that it's not necessary for my gym to be open, for me to go to karaoke, for me to go to one of my favorite restaurants. I can still make do, as I'm a resourceful person. And honestly, when I eat at home, I eat.
People who work need to make a living. That's the point.
Yeah, I eat more healthy. Honestly, I've been working out more at the house. And I think working more intensely, because I don't really take a break like I do when at the gym. And if I have to go to the bathroom, I don't have to walk to it. I just go up the stairs and go. So I've been working out more. I've been eating healthy. And yeah, my weight's looking good. And, you've seen me post.
I've lost some weight, but not eating as many restaurants.
You see me post my workout videos. I think I think I'm staying healthy, and that's nice. But I still like to get out of the house. I still like to go to a restaurant. I like to go to my gym. I like to do stuff. People, I wouldn't call myself an overly social person, but people in general are social animals. And at a certain time, it's okay. The novelty of it. We want to see if we can embrace the novelty of something different. Maybe we should learn some better cooking skills, go ahead and get some gym equipment. Yes. But eventually it just gets old. But we still want to care for...
The only thing I want to point out is that if we were back in the time of Abraham Lincoln, think of it. There were no, people did not go to restaurants. They did not go out to gyms. They never left the house. Many of them lived on the Great Plains and other places where the houses were a mile apart from somewhere else. And somehow they all survived. We, in that sense, all expect much more. We're spoiled. We want more of everything. And it's nice, but it's not essential. It's just what we want.
Our society is different, though, and it's something that we do expect. But you are right. Yeah, I always say appreciate what you have. But
yes.
We have people who depend upon a bustling economy to earn a living.
Yes.
And if you're a waiter or waitress, if you work in a bowling alley, you work in a gym, or you're an owner of one of those establishments, can you imagine the losses suffered by...
Go back. Yeah.
I'm looking at the two casinos here in Columbus. One of them is in Hollywood Casino, which brings people from all over the country, not just in Columbus. It is a regional... event gathering place. Plus, they have concerts that they charge admission for. People drink, people gamble. They're good for the economy. Again, gambling, it's like other vices. If you don't like it, don't participate. I am very much in favor of gambling, and it's wonderful that they opened, and they're so important to the economy. Can you imagine how much this is affecting not just the waiters and waitresses, the dealers?
Oh, of course.
And they purposely hired dealers from the area, the west, far west end of Columbus, which they've done so much for the economy. The waiters, waitresses, bartenders, the casino attendants, security guards, custodians, all these people that work there, they're not working. And maybe they enjoy a vacation for a couple of days, but I can assure you that they prefer to be working because they enjoy their job.
Well, of course, obviously. No, the thing is that this is all essential, but it's just a question that if we were to not have this shutdown, the theory is that it hasn't reached its peak yet and that it would be even worse. So we're going by what we're being told by scientists, and I think if we were to do nothing, that would be considered in the long run worse than shutting down for a period of time. But it is an impossible situation. Right. It can't go on forever, of course.
At this point, we kind of wonder. There's an aura of mystery. We're just three to four weeks into this, and what's it going to be like a month down the road? The Ohio stay-at-home order is through the end of April. But that's not too far away. And people are saying the peak will be closer to June. And that's when...
Yes, we may be shut down for a few months. Oh, my
hot.
God. It's just horrible. It
Ohio
is.
Has
no question.
Many festivals. Columbus has a festival every weekend. And Ohio has many professional baseball teams, minor and major league. Obviously,
yeah, baseball's out, and basketball ended its season, and football can't plan ahead, and hockey's done. I mean, and Wimbledon tennis and the Olympics, everything is gone. It's oh my God!
And I is just scared at the thought that in three months or so, we're talking about getting ready for OSU football, well, arguably the biggest college football program in the world, and one that brings a lot of money into the area, a lot of spectators, people frequenting the bars and restaurants and other businesses in the area. And even if you're like me, you're not a big fan, you appreciate the impact on the economy, and it does put places like Central Ohio on the map. And what's that going to be like? I'm kind of missing baseball right now. The Reds, my main team, They were supposed to be doing pretty well this year, and there's no baseball. Opening day should have been several days ago, but right now the players are sitting there kind of wondering what's going to happen, just like we are. But
and movies are supposed to come out in May, and now delayed. They're not going to come out. And things like that. And
a month or two down the road, Ron, we're talking about again. And I would agree the peak is probably going to be closer to June or July. Well, that's 2-3 months away. Let's say that we're still in the same situation. Do we just keep the restaurants and other businesses closed? Do we still not have any professional sports?
I don't know. It's a tough issue. And then, of course, they say it might be a low, and then it could come back in October, November, when winter comes on for most of the country. So we could be back in right at the time of the election. There's those who are concerned how we're going to conduct an election, and the convention has already been for the Democrats moved forward 5 weeks to the week before the Republican convention. And while they're going to really have a convention with thousands of delegates, while the Republicans, according to Trump, they're going to do it the usual way. And I'm thinking, if there really is this kind of condition, are the Republicans going to come in the thousands to a convention to honor Donald Trump and maybe face death because of it? Are they really going to be able to do that, and he's going to be in that convention accepting the nomination? I don't know.
Yeah, we have to look at these, and we don't want to think about it, but that could be the potential impact.
Yes.
Now, if you check out Wall Street, if you're a Wall Street follower like I am to some extent, Wall Street has suffered, but not to the extent that it did during the Great Depression. There have been days when...
Not yet.
We've had two recent records.
It did go down one-third, though. It did go down one-third from 30,000 to 20,000,
We have two record increases in the Dow based upon percentage. We've also had some very close to record-breaking decreases. And then it kind of goes back and forth. So there are people that are short-selling stocks that are kind of doing some day trading. And if you're really careful, you can make some money. But you really have to watch what you're doing because you really never quite know. It's, as I say, if you want to go on a roller coaster, Kings Island and Cedar Point, Disneyland, they may be closed. But the stock market is open for business. Of course, they don't have any floor trading. It's all electronic trading right now. But it really is going crazy up and down. Something I've never seen before. Just amazing how fragile the U.S. economy is and how we're affected by one particular event. And the aura of mystery.
It could happen again in 5 or 10 years. We could have another one like this, even if this goes away. That's what's terrifying. We cannot be sure of the future of public health.
And certainly my hats off go to the, as I know all Americans feel this way, the scientists and other people developing a vaccine and treatment for this disease. I know for my own scientific...
And doctors, nurses, firefighters, cops, all the people that can't take time off and are endangering themselves every day.
I know for my own education, how important having smart, innovative, creative scientists is. And if there is a second wave, which I would tend to think probably would occur, let's hope that at that point the vaccine and treatment have been developed. And we don't have to go through what's currently occurring in this.
But imagine 100 to 240,000 dead, more than the last five wars we've been involved in.
Right,
and that's the minimum, and it could be 2 to 2.5 million, they're saying, which would be more than all the wars we've had in our history.
We talked last time, Ron. I said this, I think, since the Civil War has been the biggest event, certainly the biggest negative event.
World War II would be the second one. But they could pass World War II, But it could be more than all the wars combined and the loss of life. It's, if it goes up to 2.2 million or whatever, it's just terrifying, the thought of losing such a large part of the population. And not just old people, young people, people of all ages, and people who are in good health. Not everybody's in bad health.
And I was thinking, well, did I exaggerate? Was I hyperbolizing, which I do sometimes? Maybe I was at that point, but at this point, I don't see it. In my lifetime, I remember 9/11 like it was yesterday. A different type of event, extremely tragic event, and something which has caused the country and the world never to be the same. But look at the current effects and the after effects of this particular issue. The world will never be the same. We'll never look at other people the same way. We'll never look at going to a restaurant the same way, going to the store the same way. This isn't the case where it'll take a generation for the economy to recover. That may be the case, even though I think the economy can recover quicker. It's more of a case where lifestyle in our
psychological attitude. Like, yeah. A lot of people might not want to go to restaurants as often, yeah, or go to public places as often because of this. Maybe they will, but not as much. So there'll be some cutback in actual business.
This is a permanent negative effect in the restaurant and bar business, and that's really a shame. My heart goes out to people in those businesses. I don't know what else to say, but it's...
And hotels. Imagine how hotels will be affected.
No, I would say the cruise ships, I think that they... I'm not an expert on cruise ships, so I don't want to claim to be, but I think that they could take some better precautions to make sure that things don't spread, as cruise ships certainly are part of
it. Well, I'll tell you, I would think most people would not be thrilled to get on a cruise ship anytime soon after this. And I was on a cruise ship once going to Alaska. It was very tight quarters, too many people. It was all right. It was nice to go to Alaska, 2010. But honestly, I'm not thrilled by going on ships. I'd rather be on something I can get off like a plane after a few hours. Yeah. I don't like to be locked into a place for so many days. So I'm not sure cruise ships are not going to lose a lot of business long term.
When you went to Alaska, Ron, did you see Russia from your front door like Sarah Palin did?
I saw Sarah Palin and I waved to her. I was in the Capitol, and I went into a Sarah Palin store. That was in 2010, right after she had been running for VP and had left the governorship. There was a whole Sarah Palin store. So I went in with my friend, and we laughed about it. I didn't buy anything, but it had a whole store. I don't think they have it now. A Sarah Palin store, totally a business of Sarah Palin things. And I thought it was so funny.
Sarah Palin, Alaska, coldest state, hottest governor.
Not so much anymore, I don't think, but back then she was, yeah.
So getting ready to close out the show. Time flies by when you're having fun, and we got a few laughs. We don't want to downplay the seriousness of these issues we talk about, but laughter is the best medicine, and I've always gone by that philosophy.
Yes, you're right.
Now, let's ask the question, Ron. As you know, both of us voted for Hillary. It was a close election. Donald won the electoral vote, not the popular vote, but popular vote isn't how you win. So let's ask the question WWHD, which means what would Hillary do? If Hillary were president right now, would she have disbanded the infectious disease department?
She would not have done so because, first of all, it was created by Obama. She was Secretary of State under him and all that. She would not have done it, and she would have had a much better reaction and much more empathy and compassion in her public statements, and she wouldn't be saying she's always correct, and she would not be egotistical like him. Not that she's a perfect lady. A perfect person. Nobody is, but there's no question it would have been a better reaction. Because as I've said to people who are worried about Joe Biden for the next election, he may not be up to it. I said, look, right now, as long as he can get through, as long as he has a good running mate who might take over during the term, if God forbid he can't handle it, I think if anything, if he really cannot handle the job after a while in the office, his wife, Dr. Jill Biden, would convince him to resign for the good of the country. I really think she loves him, and she would not let him stay in if she thought he couldn't do the job. And the VP, whoever the woman is, would take over and would do fine. But also, as my son David said, it's not just the president. It's the people around him, the kind of people he has around him in his cabinet, his advisors, and all those would be, in so many ways, better than Trump's. And also the policies would be better. They wouldn't be the policies Trump has. So it's not just the president. It's who's around him and the policies that would matter and who his VP would be. And I think the VP is coming down to three people, if I can indicate what I think. I think it's going to either be Klobuchar of Minnesota or Harris of California or a dark horse that's been talked about lately, Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, who I have talked about online, has somebody to watch. And it may be better not to pick a senator. It might be better to pick a state leader of a state like Michigan, where Hillary lost it by a bare margin, and that could really make a difference. And she seems very capable, and she's only 48, which is wonderful. A lot younger. Harris is 56, and Klobuchar will be 60. So I think one of those three is likely to be, and I think any of those three would be better than Mike Pence to be in line to be president.
So let's get back to my question, Ron, WWHD. If Hillary were president right now in early April of 2020, we're saying that she probably would not have disbanded that infectious disease department.
No, she would not.
Would we be having all these restrictions? Would the disease be as bad as it is? Would people take her more seriously or less seriously? What do you think? Let's look in our crystal ball. What do you think it would be like right now if she were president?
I think she would have started to react to this at the first hints of it at the end of December when it came out of China. And I think if we had started in January and February rather than waiting to mid-March, I think it would not have been probably as serious as it is, and might not, I can't be sure, might not have required the shutdown that we have now to the extent that it's on. It's hard to say, but any time delayed on a thing like this, and he delayed for 2 months, ignoring it and making nothing of it, and so suddenly he woke up about, 10 days ago when he really started to get serious about it, I do think that it would not have been quite as severe a reaction, I think, and it would not probably be lasting as long or causing as many people to get sick and die as seems like are going to happen. But, of course, it's all guesswork. I can't be certain, but I do think it couldn't have been worse than it is now. I think it would have been better.
We really can only speculate.
Yeah, there's no way to know for sure, but I can't imagine it being worse. No, I cannot, because it wouldn't have been the kind of thing, oh, it's nothing, and oh, it'll be gone by Easter. She wouldn't have said things like that. No, she would not, and she would have started a reaction in January, not wait till March, because he knew from the intelligence agencies that there was evidence that this was becoming a problem, but he chose to ignore it and blame it on the impeachment trial. But the fact is, even if he was upset about the impeachment trial, you have to deal with multiple things as president, and he's shown he cannot deal with multiple issues because he spent so much of his time playing golf. Now he can't, of course, so he's upset by it. But frankly, he wastes so much time not reading, read or keep up with any details, and he's wasted so much time, plays golf much more in just 4 years than Obama did in 8. By far, 2 years ago, he was doing more golf than Obama was, but he was attacking Obama, but Obama did nothing compared to this. But the man only sees things from his perspective, and he refuses to open up his mind to facts. And of course, these Fox News channel adds to that with their absolute worship of him. They're being involved in being sycophants for him. It's just unbelievable, and I think they're a disgrace. Absolutely, Fox News channel, and they're manipulating and confusing people who believe everything they say when they're really. They actually harmed the whole issue by the way they dealt with it, being skeptical about it, until Donald suddenly got interested in it.
We thank Dr. Ron Fineman again for being on our program, which we call a Fine-er Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam and the Professor. About a minute or two left, Ron. Again, he is a professor, among other things. You are using a Zoom or a similar program to do some teaching, where you teach there in South Florida, versus the in-person type of teaching that you were doing a year ago at this time. We asked you last time, but we'll ask you again. How is it going? Do you like online teaching? Do you think it's as effective as in-person teaching, or what are your thoughts?
Well, actually, I have not used Zoom for the class. I have not done it because it's too short notice. I've used Zoom with a couple of people I know online, so I tried it. But I'm going to have to do it probably next term if it continues. My class, which they started to register 2 weeks ago, the presidency course for the fall, even though there's no guarantee it's going to be in person or else online, has 32 people. Maximum 35. I'm so thrilled. I have one of the best enrollments of anybody in the department, so I'm thrilled. So I'll definitely have the class. But I have not actually done it. I've sent type notes to everybody and given them my phone number if they wanted to talk to me. But I have not actually done the lectures online, but I will have to probably do it next term. But I have tried Zoom, have tried Skype, and even Facebook Messenger, so I've spoken to a few people. And it's really fun. It's a good system, and I think it's something that can work.
Okay, well, open minds are good, you know. Minds are like parachutes. They only work when they're open. And this is certainly a good time for us
That's a good line. I like that.
For us to keep that in mind. Well, thank you again, Ron. Stay healthy there.
Thank you so much again for inviting me, and stay healthy and happy.
In the Sunshine State, we will talk to you again soon. Adam Lepp here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. And as I am fond of telling you, like Hillary, I have a private email server, but I don't delete messages. Well, I delete them if I don't like them or if they're spam. But if I want to read them, yeah, I read them because I don't delete them. And my email address on the aforementioned private email server is adam@wwgh1071.com. We encourage people to read, bookmark, delineate, giggle a bit at theprogressiveprofessor.com. That is Ron's blog, and he also participates regularly on the historynewsnetwork.com. Right, he writes for that website.
Yes, I published an article this week, by the way, mentioning that Donald Trump is no Herbert Hoover, comparing him to Herbert Hoover of the Great Depression, making Hoover look a lot better.
Right. Well, definitely encourage folks to read that, learn about history, and again, form your own opinion, because free speech, one of the great things we enjoy as Americans. Adam Lepp signing off. Thank you for joining me on a Fine-er Mid-Morning Coffee Break. Adam Lepp, the computer guy, the political discussion and chit-chat guy, WWGH1071.com.